Blog Talk Radio.
Cowards try to change our lives, change the things they despise in America. But heroes, fueled by freedom, that unalienable right to be, came to rescue the injured, rescue the innocent, rescue these truths we hold to be. Self-evident.
They went down into that crater, in that fiery hell, and sacrificed their lives. Steel and stone, sweat and heartache. Now it stands once again for freedom. So call it freedom. Call it freedom. Freedom.
And a very good Saturday afternoon to you. A little bit later than usual for me, but it is still Saturday afternoon, September 17th, 2016. And good to be here. Good to have you listening, whether you're listening live or on the archives. Jason Hawes here, of course, with American Faith Today. Hope you've had a terrific weekend and a great week. My weekend has gotten a little bit, busier or more complicated, although today wasn't, although I am going on air, so to speak, an hour later than normal because I had a little bit of not so much a computer problem, but I had some computer stuff to clean out. Running some CCleaner that hopefully did a little bit of something. It did make the browser move a little bit faster anyway because it was acting up, not terribly, but acting up enough to cause some problems and some annoyances for me. And so I had to do something there and did run a little bit of CCleaner to hopefully get everything running a bit quicker and a bit more smoothly. But I had a little bit of a mishap or a little bit of a discovery that was not great, was not all that good yesterday at work, that, again, bleeds into this weekend, maybe more so tomorrow than today. Like I said, other than preparing for a show and messing with the computer and trying to so-called fix the computer, it's been kind of a lazy, rainy Saturday afternoon for me here, but yesterday at work, and it's a problem that it seems like it's one thing or another with the car, although it's been a good car, it's been a reliable car, and it's a car actually, it's got 275,000 miles on it, not all of them put on by me, and of course, when you get into an accident, that doesn't help matters. But I'd had a little bit of an issue with it running occasionally, especially for maybe the last week or so, is when I really noticed it at times it running a little bit hotter than what it should. It hasn't overheated, thank God for that, but running a little bit hotter and warmer than what it should. And I noticed it most prevalently yesterday, which it was kind of a warm day yesterday. I was hoping we were actually beyond all that as we're in mid-September now, but we did get up to about 85, 86 degrees yesterday, I believe. And so the car was running a little bit warmer than really it should have been or that I wanted it to. At times the temperature would go down, especially if I turned the air conditioner on, but I had it looked at and were hoping, I'm certainly hoping, that it's just a clogged radiator and I need a new radiator and a new radiator hoses, which was an unplanned expense But hopefully it is that rather than actually the head gasket starting to go bad, which would be a much worse unplanned expense or situation. But so anyway, I had that to deal with today. I had that kind of on my mind going into this weekend. And I actually called our store to get a radiator hose that we did not have in stock in our store ordered, as somebody had kind of priced out all the parts for me that I might need. And we had everything in the store, everything in stock with the exception of one radiator hose. I don't know if it's the upper hose or the lower hose, but I think it might be the lower hose. But anyway, that was my lovely ordeal yesterday, and like I said, still kind of on my mind this weekend, so hopefully it all works out at least somewhat for the best, or somewhat for the better than, rather than a worst case scenario. Anyway, I decided I'm calling this show kind of Idiocracy is Here. And a lot of it has to do with things that I've talked about certainly in the past, things that I'll be talking about today with what's going on at our universities, at our school, with our young people. By the way, I'm not really, as I was looking at the stories that I have in front of me to present in a 45-minute or so span of time, I pretty much decided to skip, at least in any detail, going into Hillary Clinton's tweet, but I am actually going to briefly mention it. Apparently, Hillary Clinton tweeted out something agreeing with Michelle Obama, saying that the choice in this election is about who will have the power to shape our children for the next 4 years of their lives, which is big government to the extreme, which is very concerning for anyone who values freedom, for anyone who values even influencing their own children and raising their own children rather than the government raising their own children or raising someone else's children. And, of course, this is not to get off the subject, but this is something that pops up more and more, it seems, just as I occasionally read various stories and accounts from all over this fine country of ours. I don't remember where in particular or what state this was in, and I don't remember all the details. And it's been a week or two at least since I read it, and I certainly don't have it in front of me, but case in point, and again, not to get completely off the subject, but case in point, I was reading a while back, again about a week or two ago, of a woman, a mother, who had a son who was sick. And he wasn't, like, critically ill as far as dying or anything like that, but I don't remember if he had migraine headaches and something else, but he had a malady, he had an illness or a health condition. And the family physician, the family doctor, actually recommended that for whatever the reason, in the doctor's opinion, going to public school, going to his public school, would make the situation and make the condition worse. So he advised the mother not to send her kid to school. He even wrote kind of excuse notes, doctor's notes, saying that this individual, this young man, should not be going to public school at this particular time. And that wasn't good enough for the local government. They said, well, your son is truant, and you need to provide reason. You need to provide a good reason, a good excuse for why he's truant, which, again, she had doctor's notes. But eventually the state or the local, I'm sure it was the state, but also the local government, the school district, stepped in and took the kid, took her son away from her. Now, thanks to the help of two local attorneys, she wound up getting him back. But again, this is a case in which the state, the school district, you know, the local government, whoever all was involved, said, wait a minute, we know what's better for your kid, rather than, we know how to take care of your kid, how to better educate your kid, how to better raise your kid, whatever the case may be, than you, the parent, and the mother does. And, you know, and that's just one of the things that we're dealing with. And it's kind of the progressive mindset, the liberal mindset, and of course it goes hand in hand with trying to indoctrinate kids in certainly our universities, but before they ever get to our universities, into a particular way of thinking, a particular pattern of thinking, a particular ideology, political leaning, what have you. The first story I wanted to share, as I'm kind of strolling along here, so bear with me a little bit, if you would, please. This comes from Michigan. And, you know, it's kind of funny that I'm somewhat defending somebody who I certainly have not defended very often. It's not so much defending him in terms of Donald Trump, but it's when people just take, and, you know, again, this whole thing, this whole idiocracy thing is kind of wrapped up in, if I could phrase it in any way, in two conditions or two states of mind. Number one, believing that it's somehow a constitutional right not to be offended by anything, and that the government should step in, or that a school should step in, or that an authority figure of some type should step in and make sure that you're never offended by anything or by anyone. And the second thing, to be offended, actually, or to be outraged at anything and everything, including the silliest little things, that unfortunately is quite common in America today. And this story is case in point. It was a Michigan school district. This actually from the American Thinker. Michigan school district, it's a piece by Rick Moran. Michigan school district calls Betsy Ross flag a symbol of hate. And apparently the superintendent of a Michigan school district has apologized for allowing the display of what is erroneously referred to as America's first flag because, again, it is, quote, supposedly a symbol of exclusion and hate. Forest Hills School District School Superintendent Dan Baim apologized for the incident, which occurred during a high school football game between a predominantly white school and a predominantly black school. So here we go. I guess we're just asking for problems. Whenever you get political correctness between a predominantly white high school and a predominantly black high school during a football game. This comes from the Washington Post. Some Forest Hill students, again, the school district that is apologizing, some Forest Hill students were parading around not only with the first flag, the Betsy Ross flag, but with a Trump banner in addition to chanting, "Go green and go white," which apparently are the Forest Hill school colors. Now, it sounds innocent enough, but of course, in today's idiocracy, somebody's going to be offended. And believe it or not, I suppose it's not all that surprising. It was a white parent who was offended. The combination offended, among others, a gentleman by the name of Matthew Patlusky, a white parent of two students enrolled in Grand Rapids Public Schools. I don't know from the story, I don't know if they were playing Grand Rapids, some school from Grand Rapids. I don't know if this guy was just aware of it and not involved at all, but he had to get himself involved. But anyway, he was offended because the Trump banner, because he said Donald Trump is a candidate known for his tacit support of racist ideologies, as he wrote in an open letter on his Facebook page. And that the Betsy Ross flag offended him because it's, quote, a piece of history co-opted by white supremacists who see it as a symbol of time in our nation's history when slavery was legal. And, you know, I mean, what can you say to that? The piece goes on, Moran goes on to say that, admittedly, I am not up to speed on what is fashionable among white supremacists, but this is the first I've heard of what is commonly referred to as the Betsy Ross flag being adopted by the racist. If they did, they're almost as dumb as the school authorities. And Moran goes on to point out that the army that fought in the Revolutionary War, you know, that war that sustained or that brought about America's independence, and also was going on at the time that the Betsy Ross flag was sewn and, you know, created and in existence and portrayed and displayed and whatever you want to say. But the army was integrated. It included black people. It included freed slaves, which actually, as Moran points out, made up about one quarter of the Continental Army, according to some sources, about 25%. Others put the number at about 9,000 blacks fighting for the Continentals, state militias and in the American Navy. Moran says the Army was not integrated again until after World War II, but many black regiments fought during the Civil War and during the Spanish-American War. But anyway, it's this whole, I mean, you talk about white guilt. Again, this was a white man talking about Donald Trump's racist ideologies and getting offended because some students at a high school had the Betsy Ross flag on display, and we have to get offended at that because, during that time, slavery. And so everyone during that time, all of the founding fathers were racist. Almost all of the American, the people who fought in the Revolutionary War, I guess, were racist. Somehow, maybe even these 9,000 or so blacks who fought for Americans' independence and they were freed slaves, maybe they should have never been freed. Maybe they were racist, too. I mean, who knows? They probably should have just stayed slaves. I mean, it is absolutely ridiculous that people get offended over the dumbest, I mean, the dumbest little things such as this. And yet, here they do. And, I mean, again, here is case in point in which somebody has to make a big deal causing, again, the school district to apologize. Here's the open letter from the school district superintendent. He writes, injecting partisan politics into a community football game and into a commemoration of events of September 11th is inappropriate. Parading our current United States flag in a manner that is inconsistent with proper etiquette is disrespectful to all who have served our nation, and to wave a historical version of our flag that to some symbolizes exclusion and hate injects hostility and confusion to an event where no one intended to do so. To our gracious hosts, the students, family, staff, and community of Grand Rapids Ottawa Hills High School and Grand Rapids Public Schools, and to the student athletes, coaches, officials, and supporters of both teams, we are truly sorry. Yeah, I guess he's truly sorry that he wimped out, caved into the pressure, caved into the fact that one individual, one person with a massive case of white guilt decides that waving the Betsy Ross flag around is offensive. Again, what more can you say? And I've got a whole bunch of stories that I want to touch on today, so I can't spend or shouldn't spend a whole bunch of time on one particular story. But that happened in Michigan. And along these same education lines, and along the same Donald Trump lines. Now, this happened, I guess, up in Canada. Now, I don't know exactly what they were doing wearing Make America Great Again hats up in Canada in the first place, although I guess somebody was a Donald Trump supporter or a Donald Trump admirer or fan, whatever. From conservativefiringline.com, Joe Newby, the author, Special Snowflake, Make America Great Again hat is hate speech on college campus. A viral video posted to YouTube on Thursday shows a college student at Canada's Mount Royal University being berated by a local social justice warrior who thinks the phrase Make America Great Again on a hat consists of hate speech. And there's a video, and I'll put this on the American Faith Today Facebook page. But anyway, the woman who was so offended, Zoe Slusser, the former vice president of student life at the university up in Canada, is heard saying, "You're not allowed to share hate language in a university." Because, again, look, certainly I'm no fan of Donald Trump, no supporter of Donald Trump, but because wearing a hat that encourages Trump, Trump supporters, American voters, the American people, however you want to interpret it, and it can be interpreted in multiple ways, even though it's a Donald Trump slogan, but just the phrase, Make America Great Again, is, again, in the minds of some, or in the minds of one, hate speech. Now, the kid wearing the hat says, "I'm not allowed to support a political candidate." A group soon gathers as an argument ensues over whether it is appropriate for him to wear it. Make America Great Again means make America all for white people. No immigrants, no people of different sexual orientation, Zoe Slusser says. Does she know that Donald Trump made a big PR stunt, if you will, or a big, well, we can leave it at that, a big PR stunt to allow Caitlyn Jenner to use the woman's restroom at Trump Tower? Sluicer wound up saying in a statement, he is allowed to wear the hat. As a student, I disagree with what the hat represents. I have diverse friends, culturally and sexually, who would drop a class if the person wearing the hat was sitting in the room with them because they would feel unsafe. Because of a hat. A hat that sits on top of a person's head makes someone feel unsafe. So unsafe, apparently, that they would drop the class. That they wouldn't want to be in the same room as somebody with a red hat. Given the deeper issues of intolerance and oppression represented by the hat, I disagree with it. What is it, by the way? I mean, they're always blaming objects. You know, if they're not blaming guns, they're blaming hats. Now apparently we're going to be, we need to have, at least in Canada, they need to have hat bans and hat regulation and hat control. You know, Justin Trudeau up there in Canada, that should be priority number one, actually, is to find a way to get the parliament and the legislature up in Canada to pass hat control in that great country, and then we can pass hat control in this country as well, since that stuff always usually at some point filters down to America as well. This gentleman, Linder, again, they had an argument over the thing. Apparently, at some point, someone actually took the hat away from him because it was so dangerous to everybody. And again, it's just this whole notion that I can't be around something that I don't like that offends me. Get it away. Get it away. Seriously? I mean, and again, I got a story here from Steven Crowder. I'll go ahead and use the phrase that he uses in his story. I'm not getting to the story yet. But calling these people Generation Snowflake, look, I'm a sensitive guy, but toughen up already. I mean, if you get offended, or actually not offended, if you feel unsafe by a hat, I mean, it. Where are we going? You know, how ridiculous can we be? We are in a state right now, at least, of idiocracy in which we're just reacting knee-jerk, in which we're, again, acting like that we're these special little people, these special little snowflakes, as the phrase says now, that can't be hurt, that can't be offended, that can't be bothered by anybody, by anything that we disagree with, that we have to have our safe spaces with, and no one and no thing, no hat even, intruding on our little safe spaces, and otherwise, it's going to cause microaggressions, and we need our trigger warnings to keep the microaggressions from happening. I mean, all of this is absolutely insanity. Insanity, idiocracy, take your pick. It's happening here in the United States. It's happening, obviously, up in Canada. And, again, same type of thing. Same environment with our universities. And this from National Review. University warns students against thought crime. Expressing genuine surprise can be an aggressive act of marginalization, according to, and I'm not kidding, this is the title. Well, actually, I guess the title is Chief Diversity Officer. She's called here in the article Microaggressions Czar. That probably is coming to our university. It may even come to, especially if, maybe it doesn't matter who the next president's going to be. I would say Hillary Clinton. Who knows, maybe Donald Trump would even do it, but we might have a microaggression czar appointed by our next president, or perhaps President Obama, before he leaves office, will find a way to appoint a microaggression czar. But anyway, Chief Diversity Officer at Clark University, which I don't know exactly where Clark University is, but they have a Chief Diversity Officer known as or named Cherie Marlowe, and a student who begins by saying she's really scared to ask this, ask Ms. Marlowe if when she's in her car, or with a group of white friends, is it, quote, okay to sing along with music that uses the N-word? Because these are the important and intense debates on our college campuses these days. Miss Marlowe's answer, says the New York Times, is an unequivocal no. Also, verboten, asking Asian students whom you don't know for help with math homework, because obviously that's racist, asking a black student if he plays basketball, because obviously that's racist. I wonder if they ask a white student if he plays, like, lacrosse. If white students can claim racism on that, I'm guessing not. Asking a student whose race you're unsure of about his race, which, you know, to normal people is making conversation, but in the Clark University microaggression world, that's a no-no. Now, as it says here in National Review, pretty standard stuff on the modern campus, but Clark has entered new territory by expanding the category of forbidden aggressions to include thought crimes, such as showing surprise when a, quote, feminine woman says she is a lesbian, is, according to Clark, an aggressive act. In other words, if you see, let's say you're a guy or a girl, but, I'm a guy and I identify as a guy still. I understand how God made me and what anatomical, genitalia I was born with. But let's say as a guy who is no longer a college student, no longer on a college campus, but we're playing hypothetical here. And let's say that I see somebody who is just beautiful, you know, a beautiful girl who does look feminine, who doesn't look, again, butch, if you will, or whatever, looks like a normal, beautiful young woman. And maybe I ask her out, maybe I make a comment, who knows, let's just say I ask her out, and she says, oh, well, I'm sorry, but I'm a lesbian. And, of course, if I show any type of surprise with that information, or after being given that information, according to Ms. Marlowe, I'm committing a microaggression against that poor, defenseless, aggrieved young woman. Anyway, that's, again, that's wherever Clark University is. They obviously have their own special little problem, even though they're taking care. Thankfully, I guess they're taking care of their special little snowflakes anyway, but they have their special little problem all the same. sorry, I just got into the chat room. And yes, it is getting ridiculous, obviously, as kind of mentioned here. As Mary pointed out, that everybody getting offended basically at every little thing. Now, I mentioned Steven Crowder, who is a comedian. He's a conservative comedian, and from my understanding, he was always just pretty much a comedian who's now kind of become a conservative commentator as well, and he combines the two, the comedy with the conservatism. But this is, if you want to talk about government waste and government nonsense and government uselessness, pointlessness, what have you, the Education Department has decided that they're going to hand out over $2 million. This is our federal education department has decided they're going to hand out over $2 million to students with, quote, Freddie Gray trauma. Now, I'm sure you know what the Freddie Gray situation is. Freddie Gray, he was the kind of the lifelong criminal, the lifelong drug dealer and what have you, who was picked up by, what was it, six or so Baltimore police officers. He was arrested. He was transported in a van. He was, his hands were cuffed. His feet were cuffed or chained together. And he died on the way to the police station in that van. And, of course, the Baltimore prosecutor tried to did bring up charges against all these police officers, none of which stuck, all of whom, all of the charges were dropped. And one of the things, of course, that I remember that always stood out to me is that this guy with his feet chained together and handcuffed in the back of a van decided for some reason he needed to stand up or try to stand up in a moving van. And there was even a story that he had a tendency to try to intentionally injure himself when apprehended by the police. But anyway, Freddie Gray, that's obviously basically the background. There were riots, as Crowder points out, that happened based on the lies and media propaganda. He says, well, today is your lucky day because if you were traumatized, the Department of Education has provided $2.3 million, actually $2,374,000 in taxpayer money for counseling if you were traumatized by the Freddie Gray case. Now, the federal government gave Baltimore $2,374,000, which will go towards counseling and behavioral programs to improve the mental health of students who may have been traumatized by civil unrest. After Freddie Gray's death as a result of injuries suffered while in police custody, protests and rioting broke out in the city. Tension increased again after the officers involved were either acquitted at trial or had their charges dropped by prosecutors. And again, Crowder says, I'm sorry, this is why millennials have been branded Generation Snowflake. Did you ever think you'd hear the phrase traumatized by civil unrest? What does that even mean, Crowder asked. I think we're using the word traumatized a bit too broadly, but please, let's hear more of an explanation. Violence tears at the fabric of a school community, and the long-term effects can be devastating, U.S. Secretary of Education John B. King Jr. said in a statement. Well, then, why was it that good little Democrat Mayor Stephanie Rawlings Blake said that they gave and that she basically instructed the police officers in Baltimore to give those who wish to destroy and, in other words, commit violence, space to do so? I'm sure we're not going to get an answer to that from Mr. King or Mr. Obama or Mrs. Rawlings Blake or the prosecuting attorney who can't recall her name at the moment, who's going to be lucky to have any kind of a career in law after this. But anyway, the Department of Education is committed to addressing the mental health and social support needs of students who are impacted directly or indirectly by traumatic events in their communities. And Crowder goes on to say, if students didn't want trauma from civil unrest, then those students shouldn't have committed the civil unrest. Now, we don't know necessarily that the students themselves did. Some probably did, some didn't. Again, I regardless, try to be accurate and fair and truthful as much as I possibly can be. But anyway, almost $2.4 million going to those who may have been traumatized, which, by the way, again, the local government, basically run by a Democrat, run by a progressive mayor, a liberal mayor, basically allowed it all to happen. Basically, I want to be fair. I don't want to say encouraged it to happen, but allowed it all to happen. And probably to some degree was not altogether upset that it did happen because it gave them a platform. It gave them what have you. I'm trying to read my own handwriting here. There was one other story I think that I wanted to, one other school-related story that I wanted to go to, and then I want to finish up here kind of on abortion, various abortion stories. But I'm not going to get to it in this particular show. I will have it on the American Faith Today Facebook page. But the North Carolina bathroom bill and the North Carolina governor, Pat McCrory, who basically, of course, has defended the North Carolina bill as a reaction to the Charlotte bill that basically let transgenders pick their own bathrooms. And there's obviously been all sorts of boycotts and threats of boycotts. The NCAA has now decided that they're going to not hold championship games in the state of North Carolina. Franklin Graham, by the way, absolutely hammered the NCAA in an open letter or letter, or excuse me, the Atlantic Coast Conference, and saying that, well, you're, I believe it would be the football conference championship game is sponsored by Dr. Pepper, which does business in countries that outlaw homosexuality. And you mentioned that Toyota is a proud sponsor of the ACC or what have you. They do business, and they have production in countries that outlaw homosexuality. So when are you going to drop your relationship and your partnership with Dr. Pepper and with Toyota, which, of course, the answer to that would be never. But anyway, now that they think that they've won something in North Carolina, you have some individual called Sid Ziegler, or it's kind of the evil Zig Ziglar or something. I mean, it is. It's Sid Ziegler or Sid Ziegler. He's a blogger over at OutSports who has now floated a new proposal saying that the NCAA must, and this from TheFederalist.com, saying the article written titled, "Can Colleges Just Ban Everybody Already? It'd Save a Ton of Time and Money." Sid Ziegler saying that the NCAA must kick out Brigham Young University. Man, they love to pick on the Mormons these days, don't they? I think there's probably some sort of hidden bigotry in that. But anyway, they must kick out Brigham Young University and anti-gay members, or the Carolina move is meaningless. In other words, he wants the NCAA to kick out a university from the NCAA to somehow just, I don't know what you even do. I guess say that you can't play sports anymore. You can't have any athletic programs whatsoever. I mean, it's not even realistic. But anyway, he's going after BYU. He's going after, quote, anti-gay members, other anti-gay. It's mentioned that Pepperdine University or University of Pepperdine, whichever it is, refused to recognize a gay activist group on campus. Someplace called Les Tourneaux forbids athletes from engaging in same-sex romances. So they're out. But anyway, the author goes on to point that basically you could just kick everybody out as long as you're on a roll. Do you think marriage is a union between a man and a woman? You're out. You think boys can't have vaginas and girls can't have penises? You're out. Do you think students shouldn't run away squealing and crying from things that are mildly offensive? You're out. Are you not hyper-attentive to the myriad screaming demands of a liberal activist mob? You're out, all of you. Did you write an awkward email with the absolute best of intentions? You're out of there, baby. Did we forget anyone? What about the guys that say things like all lives matter? Yeah, get them out of here, too. And basically, you could. If you wanted to get on a roll, if you wanted to get offended at everything and everything, if you wanted to say that anything possible, anything that, you know, that the Donald Trump hat is a microaggression that keeps you up at night and makes you feel like that your life is in jeopardy because there's a Donald Trump Make America Great hat in the room with you, then why not just ban everything? Why not just ban everything and everybody at our universities if they don't agree with you? And you can have just a nice little 2% or however many is in your little group echo chamber, and then after that, the liberals can all wring their hands because nobody's at the universities anymore because you kicked them all out because they didn't agree with whatever it is that you want to preach. But anyway, moving on now to the abortion issue and some abortion-related stories. I want to start here with the GOP actually letting us down yet again. And the GOP has let us down because they want to avoid a government shutdown, because those are the absolute worst things on earth, because they get blamed for government shutdowns, they lose votes, they lose support, they get absolutely throttled in elections. Totally cream. There's no way that they would ever gain control of Congress. Oh, wait a minute. Anyway, the GOP is set to allow Zika dollars that fund Planned Parenthood. Now, they had been, as best as they can do, I guess, holding the line. It mentions here a long impasse that has delayed money to combat Zika for months neared an end Thursday as congressional aides said Republicans would relent and let Planned Parenthood affiliated clinics share in a new funding and new funding to fight the virus. The potential deal would ease the way for Congress to quit work until after the presidential election. And again, the whole thing here is they wanted to prevent a government shutdown on October 1st. It's one of these last-minute, temporary, whatever they call them, continuing resolutions or omnibus bills that they do on in a temporary basis rather than set an actual budget for the entire year that they dilly-dally on and wait till they get to the very last minute. And, hey, I'm a procrastinator myself. But anyway, they now apparently are allowing money to go to Planned Parenthood to fight the Zika virus, which we know Planned Parenthood isn't going to be out there trying to do research to find a cure, a vaccine, a treatment, whatever, for Zika. They're just going to say, well, you're, and they've already done this, as a matter of fact. They're just going to say, well, based on where you were at when you conceived, or based on where you were at sometime when you were pregnant, there's certainly a possibility that your child could have the Zika virus or that you could have the Zika virus. They'd have scary birth defects, so the best thing that you can possibly do is abort your baby, is kill your baby. I mean, that's absolutely what's going to happen with Planned Parenthood involved in the so-called fight against the Zika virus. And again, just real quickly, a reminder, as I always say, that these activists aren't about women's health at all. I'll have a story from or on the American Faith Today Facebook page in which abortion activists are trashing a group providing health care to low-income women just because this particular group is pro-life. You know, they provide the same type of service that Planned Parenthood says that they do. They provide it in a more rural and more rural areas, while Planned Parenthood is in urban areas primarily or totally. And they provide health care to low-income women, low-income families, but because they're pro-life, they're basically the devil. Now, I want to share, like I said, I want to get into something that is a positive. And these stories are always great. This from LifeNews.com to close the show. She ran a clinic for 18 years for the Planned Parenthood abortion business. Now she's a pro-life champion. Her name is Sue Thayer, worked at a Planned Parenthood center for almost 18 years, thinking she was helping women and girls receive the health care they need. Through the years, however, she became more and more troubled about the way the abortion chain operates. She walked away in 2008. She's now a pro-life speaker, pregnancy center founder, lead strategist for Iowa Right to Life, and a foster mom. She says, or she wrote in the Des Moines Register, "No person, no business should view a woman's body as a profit center, yet that is exactly what Planned Parenthood does. As the former director of two Planned Parenthood clinics in Iowa, I know firsthand how massive are the profits and how terrible are the costs generated by their predatory practices on women and girls. And all the while, our tax dollars have been helping them do it." And again, she's been a foster parent for over 130 children. She's adopted 3 children, a tireless advocate for children, a special love for the unborn. She's the founder of Cornerstone for Life Pregnancy Resource Center, dedicated to saving babies and speaking truth to the abortion industry, and again, a lead strategist for Iowa Right to Life. Now, she noticed when she was at Planned Parenthood, she noticed that the abortion chain pushed for more abortions by demanding its facilities meet monthly abortion quotas. Near the end of her employment, she said the abortion chain mandated her rural Iowa facility offer webcam abortions, a dangerous procedure where an abortion doctor prescribes abortion pills to a woman over a web camera without seeing or examining her in person. Thayer told Planned Parenthood she would not participate in the new abortion method, and for that, she was fired. In 2011, she filed a lawsuit against Planned Parenthood, accusing it of submitting repeated false, fraudulent, and/or ineligible claims for reimbursements to Medicaid and failing to meet acceptable standards of medical practice. And it goes on to say that hundreds of abortion clinic workers have left their jobs in the past few years, many because of the outreach of another former Planned Parenthood director, Abby Johnson. And it also goes on to say that abortion clinics are having a hard time finding doctors to actually perform abortions within their facilities. If a doctor moves on, they're having a hard time finding a replacement. This is, in a very real sense, great news. This is evidence that we are winning the fight on this as the pro-life people, as the pro-life movement. We just have to keep praying. We just have to keep sharing truth. We just have to keep loving.